I'd like to invite up the lovely Lina Reed. Lina, hello.
Hi, Dave.
One of the things that we want to do during this kind of series is just hear from different people in the congregation who are doing really cool stuff and just learn from one another. So, Lina, first question, who are you and how long have you been around for those who don't know you?
Yes, Dave said, I'm Lina Reed. I'm married to Andy, who's part of the leadership team here of River Church, and he also is CEO of Links International, which is a small charity that does work into the developing world. My background is that I'm a specialist teacher working with kids who've got learning difficulties, and for many years I've worked with the local authority teaching and helping their teachers to know how to support those kind of kids. I've got two grown-up daughters and two grandkids now as well.
So what was life like for you when you initially joined River Church?
Missed out that bit of information, didn't I? We actually moved over here straight after university in the early 80s, so a very long time ago. And actually, it was a miracle we ever got here, because even then it was a very expensive area to live, and we just really, on paper, didn't have the money to come. But some very generous friends helped us out, and we were able to move here. And in the early days, life was tough. We were on a low income. We had benefits. Our kids used to get free milk and vitamins because we were on such a low income. But we knew this was the right place to be, so we were always very glad to be here.
So, in the 90s, God kind of spoke to you. You were a teacher at the time,
yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
And, God spoke. What did he say?
It was probably mid to late 90s at a Pioneer Leaders Conference that we went to. And there's probably two occasions in my life where I felt I heard the audible voice of God. And this was one of those occasions at this conference, and it was completely out of the blue. I heard the Holy Spirit say to me, Lina, you're going to be a national voice in the area of dyslexia. And that was the area that I taught in. I thought, not sure about that. I can't imagine that happening at all. I was a teacher of dyslexic students. And also, I wasn't really sure it was something I wanted. I was thinking about actually changing careers at the time. So, but it was a very clear voice. So I kind of thought, well, maybe that's God, and kind of parked it on one side to wait and see if anything happened.
God spoke that, and then a few years later, you started a business. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. One of the things that I did as part of my role as a specialist teacher was, in one of the secondary schools I worked in, I did assessments about access arrangements. Now, access arrangements are arrangements that students with some kind of disability or difficulty can have in order to help them to do exams. So, for example, if you can't read, in some exams where reading's not being assessed, you have a reader. So I was doing that work in one of the secondary schools, and my boss came to me and she said, the lady I know is running training about access arrangements, and she wants to retire. But she can't, because she doesn't know who she could hand the work over to. And I thought that you could probably do it. And I thought initially that she meant sort of little hour sessions after school. So I sort of agreed to look into it a little bit further. And it gradually dawned on me that that actually meant me taking over this training completely and doing whole day courses around the country, which seemed really, really scary. But nevertheless, I started to do it. And very quickly realised that there was a huge need for this training. It just wasn't being met because no one was organising it centrally. So I spoke to my boss and said, well, why don't we do it? We're brought in service. We've got to raise our salaries. Perhaps we could employ an administrator and maybe we could run it. You know, I think that we could make some money out of this. But of course, we're a local authority. You know, you can't possibly take a risk. So I went home and said to Andy, well, if they won't do it, why don't we? And my close friend, Carol Greenslade's daughter, just started school, so she was our first administrator, and we thought we'd just try running one course. So we went to Kent, where we booked a room that would take 60 people, thinking if we only get 30, we'll just spread the chairs out a bit. And we actually ended up with 150, so we had to run a second course. And basically, that was 10 years ago, and we've been dashing around the country ever since, running the training. So it's kind of it kind of landed in my lap. It wasn't something that I was particularly looking for, but that was the beginning of the outworking of the prophecy of the word that God has spoken to me at the Pioneer Leaders Conference.
That's super cool. So what are the aims of your business? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. We've got four very clear aims. One is to get the training out there. We feel that it's really important training. It's very important that students with disabilities can access exams. So that's very important. We now run various other training, all in the area of special needs. So supporting kids with Asperger's, dyslexia, learning difficulties, behavioural difficulties, that kind of thing. So we feel the training is very important. We want to run a business, a viable business that makes an income. We want to provide work for people. So we've got a number of staff that work for us, all of them, people who work from home, most of them very bright ladies who've got kids at home, want to be at home with their kids, but nevertheless want or need to work. And, we feel that's very important. A number of people that we employ are actually part of the church, not all of them, but a number of people. And then one of the really important things is for us is that we want to raise money for charity to particularly got a burden with Andy working for Links to support the developing world and make a difference to communities there.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Always I've had a sort of burden for the developing world, and for many years we supported continue to support a home in Thailand for AIDS orphans called the House of Grace. Many of you will be familiar with that project. And in the very early days, so 10 years ago now, when I ran courses, I found that people kept asking the same questions again and again, and I kept saying the same thing again and again. They wanted to know about particular tests that you could use in these assessments. So I put together a document, a 30-page document, a page each on all the different tests that you could use. So I was answering the questions in one document, and we put that on a floppy disk. Do you remember those? And we saved them, put them in, saved one, put another one in, saved them, each one individually. And we sold those for the House of Grace for £5 each. And I thought, we might make £400 or £500, and that would be great, make a real difference to the House of Grace. So that went really well, and we've now actually over the years developed that, and we've got about 10 different resources that we use, all to do with, all to do with access arrangements, really just to make teachers' job a little bit easier, to save them time. And so we've continued to sell those over the years, and been able to make a sort of real difference. We also, of course, give a proportion of our profits each year, and each year we raise the percentage that we give, and there's various other things that we do to raise money for charity. So that's been really exciting.
That's really cool. Can I ask a cheeky question and ask about your giving to charity? How much do you give?
Well, like I said, when we first started this project with giving, selling resources to our delegates to make their life a little bit easier, I thought we might raise maybe £400 or £500, and that would be great, make a real difference to the House of Grace. So we made a decision then. I think that's the important thing for me, is that when we thought it was £400 or £500, we made a decision all that money would go to charity, and that a proportion of our income would go to charity as well. So we made a principle there. And actually, to my amazement, this year we'll actually hit £400,000. But the key for me is I made the decision at £500. I never made a decision. I never had to make a decision to give £400,000. It might have been a bit of a harder decision for me to make, but I made the decision when it was, a hundredth of that. And that's a really important principle for me.
That's brilliant, hey? So we're kind of running out of time. The kids are about to come in shortly. What do people want to hear about? Lina's low points or any advice for people? Those are my two questions.
Advice.
Give us your advice then.
I think probably that last point that I made, really, that we need to live by principles. You know, for us, we made the decision, Andy and I made the decision when we thought we might raise £500, and I'm really glad that we made that decision. And I guess the other thing is to take risks. When I heard from Father in the 90s about being a national voice in the area of dyslexia, which I have seen fulfilled. You know, I'm now on various government committees and that kind of thing, so I really do influence the whole world of dyslexia, which was, you know, completely beyond what I expected. But that actually we need to take risks. So that promise that he gave me in the 90s wouldn't have been fulfilled unless Andy and I had taken that risk to run that first course. And actually, you know, in lots of ways we had it easy because we knew that there was a product out there that was going to sell. But nevertheless, we were prepared to take that risk. And things that God promises us aren't a foregone conclusion. We have to step out and take that risk before we can see it happening.
That is fantastic. Lina, you are awesome. Should we give a round of applause? Thank you. So over the next few weeks, we're going to be hearing about from lots of people, because there's so many hidden gems in this congregation. So many people who you just kind of think, oh, they're cool. And then you get to know them and you think, wow, you're amazing.